I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Eye on the Hill, 2022, in-depth coverage on KSL News Radio.
As the legislative session officially kicks off in 40 minutes, we're facing yet another year and another move by Utah lawmakers to get rid of the death penalty in Utah, Dave.
It's House Bill 147. And it may just sound like another number, but, you know, there's thousands of bills out there. But let me tell you what House Bill 147 means to me. It's another year that a legislator is just ripping open a wound that our family has been trying to heal for 30 years.
And I always hate these moments when you and I have to drag you back into the conversation, when we have to talk about this because of another proposal on Capitol Hill. I was just a brand new reporter in Salt Lake City in Utah when your aunt and your grandmother were murdered 30 years ago, just days before Christmas. And then one of the two men convicted of their murders is on death row. It's been more than 30 years, right?
Yeah, 1990. Yep, December of 1990, the most horrific moment of our lives.
Now, the new proposal would prevent prosecutors from seeking the death penalty. So instead of the death penalty, this proposal, which lawmakers will debate over the next several weeks, it means the prosecution in a case could seek a sentence of 45 years to life in prison. So let's go back, Dave, 30 years. Again, always, you know, just cringe having to walk you back through this. But so our listeners who don't know your story, don't know this horrific nightmare that you and your family went through and have gone through for 30 years, what happened?
I do hate talking about it. The reason I do talk about it is because too often in the criminal justice system, we forget the victims. We absolutely forget the victims. And the longer it goes, the 30 years that have passed, the more you forget Aunt Kay and Grams, because that's who was taken from me. I'll just tell the story.
Sure.
And my Aunt Kay had a cabin up here. She lived in Texas. So they built a cabin up here in Oakley, and they would come up every holiday season. Everybody comes up, and we'd all go hang out there for Christmas. And anyway, two men were robbing homes in that area. And they went to my aunt's cabin, and they broke in. Nobody was there at the time. They broke in, complete strangers, had no idea who these people were, no connection whatsoever. And they were hanging out, waiting for someone to arrive. They even grabbed the family video camera and recorded each other tearing open the Christmas presents and laughing.
Sickening.
Well, my aunt, Aunt Kay, and my grandma, it's weird to say grandma. She was always Grams, right? Mm-hmm. So Aunt Kay and Grams show up with my cousin Lene, and almost immediately, like very shortly after they come into the house, they shoot and kill both Grams and Aunt Kay. This is kind of a remote cabin, so you had to access it through snowmobiles when it got really snowy during the winter. So my uncle, so after Aunt Kay and Grams had been murdered, my uncle Rolf and Trisha, my cousin, show up on the snowmobiles. And Linnea is just sitting there, having witnessed this horror. having witnessed my grandma and aunt being murdered.
Had the men left by then, Dave?
No, they were waiting again
they
still.
They were waiting. Oh.
So Uncle Rolf and Tricia, they come in. They shoot Uncle Rolf.
Ugh.
They douse him in gasoline and set him on fire. Then they kidnap my two cousins. They were 20 and 16 at the time. So they kidnap Tricia and Lene, and they leave. They get on the snowmobiles, and they take off. Because they're going to go to kind of the parking area where they're going to just drive off. My Uncle Rolf pretends to be dead. He's not dead at this point.
But he's
after
burned.
And he chases them. And as they get into the canyon, the men, the murderers, kidnappers, whatever you want to call them, they drive off. Rolf is able to, having been, again, just in terrible shape, calls 911, runs into his brother at the parking area. They call 911, high-speed chase through the canyon, and they apprehend these men, and they free my cousins. And one of these men was given life in prison, and the other was sentenced to the death penalty over 30 years ago.
Which is so hard, I think, for a lot of listeners to understand why one gets life in prison, because both sound like death penalty offenses
yep.
to me. And I'm sure there's a long backstory as to, you know, who was more cooperative with law enforcement and investigators and which one wasn't. But let's get to this discussion, Dave. And let me just take a moment and say I'm so grateful that you are willing to talk to us about it, because I agree with you. As time goes by, victims get forgotten. The lines get blurred, the memories fade, the investigators who investigated the case probably long since retired or have died. But you're still here to be the voice for Aunt Kay and Grams and your yeah. cousins and yeah. your Uncle Rolf. How do you feel about the death penalty? And do you suspect that you'll end up on Capitol Hill again this year discussing it with lawmakers?
Number one, I don't think lawmakers that are trying to push this have any interest whatsoever in hearing from me. I've done it. My family has done it. We've been up on the Hill so many times, Debbie. They do not care what we have to say. They've listened to us time and time again, and they just ignore us. I don't know why this keeps coming up, but how do I feel about the death penalty? Number one, the death penalty is not really a thing right now. I mean, let's be honest.
Why do you say that?
He's been on death row for 30 years, okay. and nothing is happening, right? So it's just a sentence. Nothing's being carried out.
Because he has appeals and he buys time. Is that what happens,
yeah,
Dave?
Yep. You get appeal after appeal after appeal. And every time there's an appeal, we get notified of it. Because the law says that you have to let the victims of the family know what is happening. So we are constantly reminded of what is happening, where they're at, what this appeal process, what this judge said. So it is a constant reopening of a wound. And it just rips that scab off and reopens the wound. And it is just awful to have to relive this. You want to move on. You want to say that was an awful, terrible thing that happened in our lives and we are moving on. But we can't. We can't every time this is brought up. And there are crimes that are so horrific, that are so premeditated, that are so intentional. We as a society have said not all murders are the same. If you are drinking and driving and you kill somebody, that is one kind of murder. If you sit in somebody's cabin waiting for them to arrive and execute, that is a different kind of murder. And there are some that are so diabolical and so awful that we as a society have said, you know what, we can treat those differently. And there are certain people that have forfeited their life. And that's why we have the death penalty.
And now this, we're talking about this proposal. In fact, we're going to speak to the lawmaker who is sponsoring this legislation to convert the death penalty cases to 45 years to life. These would be 45 years to life sentences for those who are convicted. Dave, in the minute or so we have left in this part of the discussion, I know for a fact in covering these horrific crimes over 30 years of reporting here that so often the death penalty is used by prosecutors. They put it on the table to get information from the suspect on perhaps where they buried a body.
Yes.
Or what happened in the case. And then if they confess, they remove it and send them to prison for life. So it sounds to me like you're also fearful that, this would be taken away as a tool to find those who have been murdered and get closure for families to know where their loved ones have been buried by a murderer.
It happened so recently. I mean, you listen to the Cold podcast, the story of Joyce Yost. We still don't know where Joyce Yost's body is. More recently, the story of Lizzie Shelley.
Yes.
You remember that little five-year-old girl that was raped and murdered by her uncle.
Up in northern Utah.
In northern Utah, in kind of the Logan area. Had hidden their body. They'd been looking for this child for days and days. And it wasn't until the prosecutor said, "We will take the death penalty off the table," that her uncle finally told them where that little baby was. And there's more to it. You listen to what the prosecutors, they don't, these prosecutors are not just using this. They're not using it left and right. They show great discretion in when to use the death penalty, to when to go after it. And I don't understand why you would remove that possibility.
Well, let's ask that question to Representative Laurie Snow when he calls the show next.
Eye on the Hill, 2022, in-depth coverage on KSL News Radio.
Representative Laurie Snow and Utah State Senator Dan McKay trying to abolish the death penalty in the state of Utah. Here's where things stand right now. Instead of the death penalty, they support a sentence of those convicted of 45 to life behind bars, Dave.
Yeah, and this, I tell you, Deb, every single year this comes up, and it's just ripping open a wound for our family. My grandma, Grams, and Aunt Kay were murdered in cold blood in 1990, December of 1990. I cannot believe it has been that long.
And I remember this so well, Dave, as I was moving to Utah in December of 1990. This was a major news story. And here I am all these years later working side by side with you.
Yeah, and we're still talking about it.
Yeah.
Not only was my aunt and grandma killed, murdered, my Uncle Rolf, he was shot, doused in gasoline, set on fire. My two cousins were kidnapped. I mean, this was as horrific a crime as you can imagine. So premeditated, so awful. One of the murderers, one of the two, was given the death penalty. And it has been over 30 years. And I'll tell you, Debbie, I have been a victim's advocate for a very, very long time. Because my biggest frustration is we so easily forget the victims of these crimes. Too much time has passed, too many things have happened in between, and I'm watching people fight for the most heinous of murderers, the most premeditated, the most cold-blooded, and I want to know, who's standing up for the victims? Who's standing up for families like mine?
Representative Laurie Snow is on the line right now. Good morning, Representative Snow.
Good morning.
So I'll ask on behalf of Dave's family this question. When it comes to this piece of legislation that you're sponsoring, who is standing up for Aunt Kay and Grams and Dave's family?
Well, it's a fair question, but before we get to that, I'd like to go back to your opening statement. I think it's Debbie, is that right?
Yeah.
This legislation does not do away with life without possibility of parole. So that was a misstatement. Most of those charged with these heinous crimes of murder are sentenced to life without parole. This legislation does not do away with that.
But But does it do away with opportunity for prosecutors to use the death penalty? I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
It does, but there's some misinformation that it does away with life without possibility of parole, and that would remain on the books. And as I said, the majority of the sentences in these kinds of crimes that I think David has mentioned are sentenced that way. Now, let me just say, David, I would never try to tell a victim how they should or should not feel about this. And I understand that there are victims who feel this way, but I also understand there is a growing number of victims or families of victims who have a differing view. And in fact, when you ask the question, who's standing up for the victims, I have been moved on this matter because of my conversations with a victim who lives in my district, and she has been very vocal on this issue. And her sister was killed in 1984 in a horrific murder. And her sister and infant daughter, that was the famous Lafferty case, 1984. When I heard her story about what her family has been through, because at least with one of the brothers that was involved, Ron, the death penalty was imposed, but never fulfilled. So this individual, Ron Lafferty, was sentenced twice to death penalty, had to be retried, went through all the appeals, and he finally died of natural causes in November of 2019, some over 35 years after the crime was committed. His brother, Dan Lafferty, is still serving a life sentence. We hear nothing about Dan, but in the words of Sharon Weeks, my constituent, their family went through hell with all of the trials and the retrials and the hearings. The worst part about it, she said, is they were promised the death penalty and the state could never bring it to pass. Now, I will not advocate against how a victim feels. And David, I will not tell you that the way you and your family feels is wrong, but I will say that there are other victims who did not want to go through the sensationalism and the all of the emphasis on Ron Lafferty and very little to her beautiful sister who was murdered. In the case of the brother who's serving a life sentence, they've heard nothing. And that would have been their preference looking back. She's not the only victim that feels that way.
I think there's a misconception that just because you have received the death penalty that you have a certain number of appeals or more rights. You don't. You have the same amount of appeals is everybody else. They obviously fight them, but it's not like the death penalty gives you an additional 500 appeals.
I don't think it gives you an additional 500 appeals, but the level of scrutiny is much higher in death penalty cases, and the U.S. Supreme Court has indicated that. And the reason they've done that is because they've said it is such a sentence of finality.
I understand where you're coming from, and I've heard the arguments, but doesn't it concern you at all when we're talking about criminal justice reform? Look for example, what happened with Sirhan Sirhan. He assassinates Robert F. Kennedy, who was likely going to be the next president of the United States. He assassinates him, shoots five other people, receives the death sentence, and then California overturns the death penalty, much what Utah is trying to do. And then After enough time has passed, the parole board has recommended that Sirhan Sirhan, the assassin of Robert F. Kennedy, they have recommended that he be released from prison. Can you see where our fear comes that once you start lessening and easing up these punishments on people, the next thing you know, you have some parole board that says, yes, RFK's assassin should walk free.
I understand what you're saying. And in the case of California, their law that they passed apparently is different than the one that I'm advocating for. Ours would be going forward, not having any impact on the seven people that are currently on death row. The other thing that I think has become more apparent to us, and again, it's not related to victims per se, but that we charge and we prosecute and we convict people who turn out to be innocent. I think in the state of Utah, I think we've seen at least 18 people factually exonerated. Some of them are very serious cases, including murder. The problem with exonerations eventually, and in the case, one case of the woman that was convicted erroneously or wrongly for murder, she served 18 years. At least the state,
but not of capital
cases,
made, Representative Snow. Not of capital cases. That's a huge difference. The burden of
not
proof.
Not in Utah yet. But hundreds of cases across the country, capital cases. And so the question is, again, setting aside the victim issue, is do we support a system that wrongfully prosecutes, wrongfully convicts people, potentially of capital cases? Or do we sentence them to death by sentencing them to death in life in prison without possibility of parole? But David, again, I know this is personal to you, and I apologize if I've said anything that is offensive to you, but I just wanted to explain what this was about.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. I appreciate you having this conversation. It's raw. It's raw for a lot of families, and I know, from personal experience with a lot of family members, that this kind of stuff, this conversation, this is just extremely difficult. But we do appreciate you joining us.
Dave and Dujanovic.
Dave and Dujanovic have insights on the news you've come to appreciate.
The stories that are really important.
And now we're expanding Dave and Dujanovic from 9 all the way to noon.
Join them on KSL News Radio.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.